This is Rewind. Rewind.
History says Alexander the Great died in 323 BCE at just 32 years old. But that's really all we know for sure. To this day, experts still debate the death of one of history's greatest warriors. How he died, why he died, and what happened to his remains. There are a lot of theories on the death and final resting place of Alexander the Great. And today, we're getting into all of them. I'm Dr. Hrini Bhatt, and this is Hidden History, a Rewind original powered by Pave Studios. On this show, we're exploring real events from history that have yet to be fully explained and examining all the different theories from science to the supernatural and everything in between. From vanished civilizations and doomsday prophecies to paranormal experiences and unexplained phenomena, I'm looking at it all and I want you to join me. Before we begin, I'd love it if you could rate, review, and follow Hidden History. Your support allows our community to grow and for other people to discover the show. We're also on YouTube with full video that brings each episode to life. Just search at Hidden History Pod and subscribe. Today, I'm talking about one of history's most debated deaths. Not JFK, not Marilyn Monroe, not Amelia Earhart. I'm talking about the warrior king, Alexander the Great, whose strange, prolonged death at just 32 years old has kept people guessing for over 2,000 years. And it isn't just what killed Alexander the Great. Is that his remains are still missing to this day. Spoiler, we're not about to find them, but researchers might be closer than ever. And this story is definitely worth another look.
Why have I asked my electrician I found on Angie.com to bury my pet hamster Nibbles in our yard for me? Because I was so moved by how carefully he buried my electrical wires, I knew I could trust him to bury my sweet Nibbles after his untimely end.
Huh, Nibbles. Gone too soon. May he scurry in peace.
Hey, sorry about your pet, but I just wire stuff.
Nibbles would have loved you like a brother.
Connecting homeowners with skilled pros for over 30 years. Angie, the one you trust to find the ones you trust. Find pros for all your home projects at Angie.com.
Summer routines live or die by how easy they are. And honestly, if something takes too much effort, I'm out. That's why Grunes is my go-to. It's one daily pack of gummies covering my greens, vitamins, and minerals. Plus, it has 6 grams of prebiotic fiber, which is more than 2 cups of broccoli. No mixing powders, no giant pills, no hassle. Just rip open the pack and I'm done. They taste good and it makes it easy to stay on top of my health, even when life gets busy. Save up to 52% off with code PODCAST at Grunes.co. That's code PODCAST at GRUNS.co.
May 323 BCE. 32-year-old Alexander the Great is doing what 32-year-old world conquerors do, throwing parties in Babylon. And honestly, he'd earned it, or at least he thought he had. In just 12 years, as king of Macedonia, he'd conquered kingdoms from southeastern Europe all the way to the edge of India, building an empire spanning 3 continents and 2 million square miles. This young king seemed unstoppable. Maybe even invincible. People across his empire were starting to wonder if the rumors were really true, that Alexander wasn't just a man, he was a god. Before long, they learned he was just as mortal as they were. But let's back up, because to understand how Alexander died, you need to understand how he lived. Alexander was born powerful, in a way. He was the son of King Philip II and Queen Olympias of Macedonia. Not a bad position to be in. But here's where kind of powerful comes in. Because at the time, Macedonia was a small, scrappy kingdom in the northern part of the Greek peninsula. Most of the classical world looked down on it as a backwater full of unsophisticated people. Not exactly world beaters. But Philip II was determined to change all of that. And Alexander's mother, Queen Olympias, wasn't exactly keeping expectations reasonable. Before Alexander was even born, she claimed to have had a dream where she was struck by a thunderbolt, which in the ancient world meant one thing. She'd been touched by Zeus himself. So her son? Part god. No pressure. Then, on the day Alexander was born in 356 BCE, Philip led his army to victory in battle, and his horses won the Olympics. what other explanation was there? This kid had to be divine. Omens aside, Alexander had a genuinely extraordinary upbringing. He could tame wild horses as a youth. And from the time he was a teenager, his private tutor was none other than Aristotle. Yes, that Aristotle. But Alexander wasn't just studying philosophy. When a neighboring people attacked Macedonia while his father was away, 16-year-old Alexander stepped up and crushed them. That victory set the tone for everything that came next. And it came a lot sooner than anyone expected after Philip was assassinated in 336 BCE. Alexander's ascension wasn't guaranteed, though. He was technically only half Macedonian. His mother was from Epirus, but Alexander had already proven himself as a warrior, and the army assembly immediately proclaimed him the next king. Over the next 12 years, Alexander picked up where his father left off, conquering everything he could reach, and I mean everything. We're talking the modern-day countries of Afghanistan, Egypt, Iran, Iraq, Pakistan, parts of India, Turkey, and about a dozen more. His empire eventually stretched across three continents. Along the way, he picked up a wife, Roxana, and an ever-growing belief in his own legend. He founded or renamed roughly 20 to 30 cities after himself. Some ancient scholars, such as Plutarch, put that number closer to 70, most of them called Alexandria. Subtle. His last campaign was India, where he took an arrow to the lung. That made the trip back home a lot harder than the trip in. So in 323 BCE, 32-year-old Alexander decided it was time for a break. He brought his very pregnant wife and his inner circle to Babylon. Babylon was the jewel of Mesopotamia, located in present-day Iraq and what you've probably heard called the cradle of civilization. It was the heart of Alexander's empire. The city was protected by three layers of baked mud brick walls, and inside those walls were two absolutely breathtaking palaces. The southern palace had hundreds of rooms, and it's believed that the legendary Hanging Gardens were on the grounds, which, if they really existed, were one of the seven wonders of the ancient world. Vibe-wise, Babylon was basically the Las Vegas of the ancient world. At least according to the Bible. Now, could there have been an agenda there? Sure. Babylon's empire had destroyed Jerusalem. But either way, with its lavish palaces and endless wine, Babylon was exactly the kind of place a king like Alexander could unwind. And Alexander absolutely took part in every indulgence Babylon had to offer. He was young, he was resilient, people thought he might be a god. What's the worst that could happen? As it turns out, a lot. On May 29th, 323 BCE, Alexander threw a huge banquet for his army to celebrate the end of the impending invasion of Arabia. The wine was flowing, animals were sacrificed to the gods, then eaten for dinner. Standard operating procedure from Macedonian king. But the real festivities started after dinner. Alexander and his guests downed glass after glass of wine. The goal was drinking to the point of unconsciousness. If that didn't happen, maybe a good time wasn't had by all. Alexander's closest companions were in the room. He drank an individual toast to every single one of them. But then he did something unusual, for him anyway. He announced he was turning in early. The men in the room looked at each other. This wasn't the Alexander they knew, but they shrugged it off. Maybe he just wasn't feeling it that night. Alexander went to his chambers and took a bath, his usual pre-bed ritual. But when he got out, his friend, Medius, stopped by. There was an after party. Alexander was about to say no, but Medius insisted. The king was never one to turn down one more drink, so he agreed. Alexander kept drinking at Medius's party, but still wasn't feeling 100%. So he excused himself and finally went to bed for real. The next day, Alexander woke up achy and feverish, but he survived an arrow to the lung in India. Surely he could kick whatever this was. He just needed to take it easy. He spent the day in bed, then had a few close friends over for dinner. At one point, Alexander dared a guest to down a crater of wine, basically a giant bowl of it. And one thing to note, wine was different back then, more thick and syrupy and not quite as strong. So this wasn't the craziest challenge. It was still a lot to drink though, but the man did it. Then he challenged Alexander to do the same. So Alexander picked up the bowl and started to drink. Before he could finish, Alexander dropped the bowl and cried out in pain. He said he felt like someone drove a spear into his back. He fell back onto his pillow. The party was over. 2 days later, the fever still hadn't broken, but Alexander refused to look weak. He had his men carry him out on a couch so he could at least lead his daily prayers. He couldn't walk, but his mind was still sharp. He called his top commanders Ptolemy, Perdiccas, Leonidas, Nearchus, and Eumenes to discuss the upcoming invasion of Arabia, an invasion Alexander fully intended to lead himself. But the next day, he still couldn't move. Not good for his health or the optics. So he had his men carry him up the Euphrates River to the other palace, the one with the hanging gardens. He thought the calm of the gardens might soothe him. Besides, this palace was more secluded. The last thing he needed was for his kingdom to see their king looking weak. But Alexander was weak, and he was getting worse. A few more days passed, and his condition deteriorated further. His staff started to notice. A great warrior and a man that many suspected wasn't even human would surely have been able to overcome an illness in a few days. But Alexander couldn't. He wasn't going to let that stop him, though. Around June 5th, after a week at the Northern Palace, Alexander was carried back to the Southern Palace. He told his commanders to meet him there. He planned to give them their marching orders for Arabia. There was just one problem. When he woke up the next morning, June 6th, he could barely speak. His commanders gathered around his bed, waiting. Alexander motioned for his most senior general, Perdiccas, to step forward. Then he reportedly removed his signet ring and handed it over. The room went silent. Everyone understood. Their invincible leader was transferring power. Maybe he was mortal after all. One of his men asked what they were all thinking. Quote, "To whom do you leave the kingdom?" End quote. Alexander summoned everything he had left to answer. Quote, "To the strongest." End quote. Word got out fast. Rumors spread through the kingdom that Alexander was already dead, but he wasn't. Not yet. His soldiers threatened to riot if they couldn't see him one last time. So they were let into his chambers to see what remained of the great warrior. Mute, paralyzed, and barely conscious. A line formed out the door. One by one, soldiers filed past his bed. Alexander could only nod or blink. The next day, on June 10th or 11th, Alexander the Great died of a mysterious illness that took only 2 weeks to kill him. And a major reason we know the exact date? One anonymous Babylonian. This man kept an astronomical diary, a log of the stars and their movements scratched onto clay tablets. And right under the date, he wrote three words. Quote, "The king died," end quote. A man who conquered 2 million square miles of Earth reduced to a footnote in a stargazer's diary. Then moving on to more important matters, he noted one word about why he hadn't recorded the stars that night. Clouds. End of entry. It's the only known contemporary record of the date of Alexander the Great's death. That stargazer might have had better things to do, but the rest of Alexander's empire, they were about to lose their collective minds. As soon as the weather starts heating up, I immediately start pulling my lighter fabrics to the front of my closet. The pieces that look effortless but actually feel good the moment you pull them on, which for me is usually something linen. That is exactly why I keep coming back to Quince. They specialize in high-quality essentials like breathable linen, soft organic cotton, and even washable silk. But they do it all without that typical luxury markup. They have beautiful everyday pieces like 100% European linen pants, dresses, and tops with styles starting at just $32. Their denim is surprisingly soft, and I've been living in their linen button-down and paired with some gold jewelry. It's so lightweight, I actually forget I'm wearing it. And it isn't just clothes. They've become a total destination for home, kitchen, and bedding too. Elevate your summer wardrobe. Go to quince.com/hidden for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada too. That's quince.com/hidden for free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/hidden.
DMV summers are no joke. The heat, the humidity, the beltway at 5 p.m. AC season is here and your car needs to keep up. Rota is the DMV's most trusted auto shop with over 1,000 five-star Google reviews. From AC checks to oil changes to detailing, we keep your car ready with no hidden fees and no pressure. Plus, free valet pickup and drop-off, so you don't have to lift a finger. Book at rota.com and save 20% on maintenance, repairs, or detailing with code POD20.
The second Alexander the Great died, his empire descended into chaos. Alexander hadn't exactly planned for anything beyond his death. The closest he'd come to a succession plan was handing Perdiccas his ring and saying, "to the strongest." Kind of vague, which is probably the last thing you'd want a succession plan to be. And that left a lot of people trying to decide who the strongest of them was. Literally. Just 2 days after Alexander's death, soldiers burst into his chamber and started physically fighting over who was in charge. And they did so right there in front of his body, which mysteriously hadn't even started to decompose, despite the sweltering June heat. Once things calmed down, without any resolution, I should add, Babylonian priests finally started embalming the body, 6 days after Alexander's death. But here's the strange part. The body still hadn't shown any signs of decomposition, which only made the Alexander was a god theory more convincing. Keep that detail in mind, it's going to come back later. His mummified remains were placed in a gold coffin to be buried in Macedonia, almost 1,500 miles away. Craftsmen began building a funeral carriage for the journey, but this wasn't any ordinary carriage. It was basically a temple on wheels, requiring 64 mules to pull it. It took 2 years to build. In the meantime, there was a fragile compromise over Alexander's succession. Roxana's newborn son, Alexander IV, and the boy's mentally ill uncle, Philip, were made co-kings with Perdiccas as regent. Safe to say, it wasn't going to last, so the infighting continued. And in 321 BCE, while the funeral procession was en route to Macedonia, Alexander's friend Ptolemy hijacked it and diverted the body to Egypt. It was a power grab, plain and simple. Alexander's remains never made it to Macedonia. They were first taken to Memphis, the Egyptian one, not the one in Tennessee with the giant Bass Pro Shop pyramid, before finally being placed in a mausoleum in Alexandria, Egypt. Maybe the most famous of the dozens of cities he'd named after himself. Alexander's tomb became a landmark, and over the next few centuries, it was visited by leaders from all over the world, including Julius Caesar and Augustus. But by the 4th century CE, the tomb just vanished. No one knows where it went. It may have been destroyed in a war or earthquake. Some historians believe it could be underwater. But the location of his tomb isn't the only mystery surrounding Alexander's death. There's a bigger one. What actually killed a healthy 32-year-old warrior king in just 2 weeks? Let's dig into the theories, starting with what gets most of us in the end. Disease. So what do we know for sure? We know that in the 2 weeks before his death, Alexander was running a fever. He was too tired to walk, and he had some shooting internal pain. Those symptoms could point to any number of things: influenza, meningitis, pancreatitis, even typhoid. But there are a few additional factors that narrow the field. starting with malaria. The most common symptoms of malaria can look a lot like flu: fever, chills, extreme fatigue, and muscle aches. Untreated, it can progress to respiratory and organ failure, which sounds a lot like what Alexander experienced, and his physical location strengthens the case. Malaria spreads through mosquito bites, and Babylon was surrounded by swamps. Mosquito heaven, especially in May and June when Alexander was there. So he could have died of malaria, except the parasite behind deadly malaria is Plasmodium falciparum, and it typically causes a fever that swings dramatically between high and low temperatures. Alexander's fever was persistent, but didn't seem to follow that pattern. Plus, if malaria-carrying mosquitoes were rampant in the Babylonian swamps, you'd expect a wider outbreak, not just one man getting sick. So maybe not malaria. Then what? In 2003, scientists at the Virginia Department of Health and Colorado State University proposed a different answer: West Nile virus. West Nile causes fever, aches, fatigue, rash, and swollen lymph nodes. And when fatal, it can cause paralysis before death, which is exactly what happened to Alexander. It wasn't the symptoms that clinched the theory for these researchers. It was a flock of birds. The Greek biographer Plutarch documented something strange. When Alexander first entered Babylon, he noticed a flock of ravens acting erratically, flying into each other, pecking wildly. Then, suddenly, they all dropped dead at Alexander's feet. For thousands of years, people wrote this off as a bad omen. But in 1999, when West Nile virus first appeared in the United States, that story took on a new meaning. Humans get West Nile virus from birds, but not directly. Usually, a mosquito bites an infected bird, picks up the virus, then passes it to a human. And right before the first human outbreaks in 1999, a wave of mysterious bird deaths, eerily similar to what Plutarch described. But this theory has problems too. West Nile needs time to build up in mosquito and bird populations before it spills over into humans. Alexander got sick in late May and died in early June. In a climate like Babylon's, the peak spillover period wouldn't hit until July or later, so the timing doesn't quite work. And we can't even be sure the bird story really happened. Plutarch was writing centuries after the fact. It could have been symbolic foreshadowing, not journalism. But there's a more recent theory that takes a completely different angle. Instead of asking what killed Alexander, it asks, why didn't his body decompose? And here's the chilling answer: he wasn't actually dead. In 2018, Dr. Catherine Hall at the University of Otago in New Zealand set out to find a scientific explanation for the non-decomposition, one that didn't involve divinity. She found it in the detail of his paralysis. The ancient sources didn't describe Alexander as delusional or unaware, just unable to move or speak. Dr. Hall proposed that Alexander had contracted Guillain-Barré syndrome, an autoimmune condition that attacks the nervous system. It can cause paralysis, but leaves the mind intact. Here's the key. Ancient doctors determined death by checking for breath, not pulse. So Guillain-Barré can slow breathing to near undetectable levels. So there's a very real possibility that Alexander didn't decompose because he wasn't dead yet. And what actually killed him was the embalming process, which included a complete disemboweling of the body. It is possible that Alexander the Great was mummified alive. As chilling as that thought is, let's not get ahead of ourselves. These are modern conclusions reached over 2,000 years after the fact. But people at the time had their own theory, and it didn't blame a disease. It blamed a person. Which leads us to our next theory. At the time of Alexander's death, a story started to spread, not about what killed him, but who. The narrative taking hold was that two people had conspired to murder the king. The first, a man named Antipater. As Alexander conquered more and more territory, he couldn't run it all himself. So he appointed regents, trusted generals or local leaders to govern in his absence. For his home kingdom of Macedonia, he chose Antipater, a trusted family friend who'd served his father, King Philip II. So why would a guy like that want Alexander dead? By the time Alexander died in 323 BCE, Antipater was 70 years old and had been locked in a years-long power struggle with Alexander's mother, Olympias, over who really ran Macedonia. Then, shortly before Alexander's death, the king took a side. He stripped Antipater of the regency and summoned him to Babylon. Antipater suspected Alexander was planning to imprison or kill him, so he decided to strike first. But he needed help. He turned to the second person in this alleged conspiracy, his close friend and Alexander's former teacher, Aristotle. Aristotle and Alexander were no longer on good terms. The main reason? Alexander had imprisoned and executed one of Aristotle's other proteges. Alexander had his reasons. The man had refused to bow to him and was suspected of involvement in a conspiracy against Alexander a few years earlier. So Alexander had him killed, and Aristotle never forgave him. According to this theory, Aristotle agreed with Antipater. Alexander had to be stopped, and the only way to stop a man like that was to kill him. Their plan? Poison. Now here's where we slide into a little mythology. According to the story, Aristotle sourced the poison from the river Styx, the mythical river connecting Earth to the underworld. Its water was supposedly so toxic, it could eat through bronze, glass, and clay. Maybe Aristotle figured only water from the River of Death could kill a god king. He hid the poison inside a dead mule's hoof, the only vessel supposedly strong enough to hold it, and passed it to Antipater. Then Antipater sent word that he wouldn't be coming to Babylon after all. Instead, he handed the hoof to his son Cassander, who went in his place. Cassander arrived in Babylon and slipped the poison to his brother Iolaus, who just happened to be one of Alexander's official wine pourers. Iolaus also had a lover, Alexander's friend Medius, who he convinced to arrange that party where Alexander was dared to drink a ton of wine. Medius reportedly even got generals like Leonidas and Nearchus in on the plot. Cut to the night of the party. Iolaus slipped the poison into Alexander's wine. Alexander drank, then cried out in pain. A frantic Alexander tried to make himself vomit. He asked Iolaus for a feather, which Iolaus brought to the king after dipping it in more poison. Alexander doubled over and took to his bed for days. When he started to improve, he asked Iolaus for water. Iolaus poured the rest of the poison into the glass. Alexander drank it and was dead shortly after. This version of the story is huge, if it's true. But there are serious problems with it, beyond the mythological poison. Alexander had enemies, sure, but his inner circle, he kept them happy with titles, wealth, and endless festivities. It's hard to imagine Medius casually signing up for a murder plot. And men like Leonidas and Nearchus knew how good they had it. Kill the king and all that goes away. Why risk it? And the poison itself, even if the River Styx is a stand-in for a real substance, slow-acting extended-release poison didn't exist in 323 BCE. Any poison potent enough to kill would have done so quickly, not over 2 weeks. And then there's Antipater himself. He was a seasoned politician who understood the real reason Alexander was replacing him, to separate two people who wouldn't stop fighting, his regent and his mother. Alexander actually respected Antipater, but mom was mom. No one was going to come before her. Antipater didn't love the situation, but he probably wasn't about to assassinate a king over it. The man was 70. Retirement probably didn't sound that bad. So who spread this story in the first place? Probably Antipater's actual rival, Alexander's mother, Queen Olympias. She likely spread the poisoning narrative to smear Antipater and ensure neither he nor his family held power again. That didn't exactly work, though. It was compelling gossip for a while, but ultimately it didn't stick. Nobody gave it serious weight in the long run. Either way, Alexander was dead, and that created a problem for his legacy, specifically the part where people believed he was a god. Which brings us to our next theory, and it's all about Alexander's divinity.
Hey parents, we all know summer break is for fun, but it's also a time when kids can start losing some of the progress they made during the school year. We want them to stay engaged and keep those young minds active. Between camps, vacations, and family time, it can be tough to keep a learning routine going. That's why I want to tell you about IXL. IXL is an award-winning online learning platform that helps kids truly understand what they're learning. Whether they're building math confidence, strengthening reading and writing skills, or reviewing science concepts, from pre-K through 12th grade, IXL offers personalized interactive learning that adapts to each child's level and pace. It's an easy way to keep learning going through the summer and helps kids feel confident heading into the next school year. Studies show kids who use IXL score higher on tests, proven in all 50 states. And get this, IXL is used in 96 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. That's a huge endorsement. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXLLearning.com/audio. Visit IXLLearning.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Isn't it crazy that America is turning 250 years old? I mean, look how far we've come. Now, we've got coolers in our sofas, light-up cup holders, and power-articulating headrests. When it comes to furniture worthy of this major milestone, Bob's Discount Furniture has all the styles all of America wants at the everyday low prices we deserve, backed by tons of five-star reviews. Check out the Sedona Power Reclining Sofa, a genuine leather one-stop shop for relaxation with built-in charging, cup holders, and supportive Bobapedic seats, perfect for lounging in the AC all day. You can even complete the look with the matching love seat and recliner. Throwing summer parties? The HomeWorks dining set features comfy Bobapedic seating and clever storage built right into the table and bench. Or customize your space with the customer favorite modular Bob Sectional. It has over 1,000 five-star reviews, family-proof construction, and wireless charging for hundreds less than the competition. At only $250 per piece, building your dream sectional is incredibly affordable. Celebrate the 4th at Bob's. It's where America shops for furniture.
Remember the lightning dream? Olympias believes Zeus had blessed her womb, making Alexander divine. And unlike the poisoning story, this one stuck. Much of the empire genuinely believed it. But imagine thinking your king is a god, only for him to die from an illness, just like any normal person. That's a hard thing to accept. Unless a legend about his wife might help keep the myth alive. Roxana was by his side throughout his illness. The last thing she needed was for the father of her unborn child to die, especially because Alexander wasn't exactly thinking about setting things up for the future. So one night in early June, when Alexander was already sick, the legend says that Roxana went to her husband's chamber. He wasn't in bed. She knew he could barely move on his own. So wherever he was, someone must have carried him. But then she noticed a secret passageway leading out of his chambers. It was open and would have only fit Alexander. Roxana ran out of the palace and found her husband alone, weakly crawling toward the Euphrates River. She threw her arms around him. He hugged her back, then pulled away. When she asked what was wrong, Alexander scolded her. She was stealing his immortality. It slowly dawned on Roxana. He was trying to drown himself. If his body disappeared into the river, no one would ever find it. and everyone would have to assume he really was a god, because a dead god wouldn't leave any remains, or the remains he did leave would stay perfectly pristine, which Alexander didn't plan for, but is exactly what happened, confirming what everyone had already suspected. This man was a god, and his grave should be protected at all costs. Which brings us right back to the mystery of where his body is today. Remember, Alexander's body ended up in Alexandria, Egypt, after the funeral hijacking, but then it vanished in the 4th century CE. As recently as 2025, a Greek researcher and archaeologist named Calliope Limnaios Papacosta says she's closer to finding his grave than anyone has ever been. She believes Alexander was buried in Alexandria, the last known location of his tomb, but the exact spot was deliberately hidden, but not from earthquakes or floods, from invading Christians. In the late 4th century, Roman Emperor Theodosius, who was Christian, ordered the eradication of all pagan symbols throughout his empire. In 391 CE, he approved an invasion of Alexandria and the burning of temples. Calliope believes a pagan priesthood, knowing the Christians were coming, hid Alexander's remains to prevent the tomb's destruction. In 2009, she led a dig near today's Alexandria National Museum, searching for the intersection of two important ancient roads. She found a statue of Alexander instead, and now she believes the tomb is very close. You may have heard that Alexander isn't the only legendary ruler on the cusp of being found. A separate team believes they're close to locating Cleopatra's tomb. If both were discovered, we'd be living in a golden age of finding lost rulers. But until a dig produces remains definitively proven to be Alexander the Great, he stays missing, and he may never be found. And maybe that's just how Alexander himself would want it. As human beings, we always want answers, especially surrounding death. And I don't mean the big cosmic questions. I mean the specific ones. How did they die? What happened in those final moments? Maybe we're so afraid of the unknown that any answer, even a painful one, feels better than none. Hearing that someone was in an accident or that they had cancer is enough to quiet the fear, at least temporarily. Or maybe we just need to know how someone's story ends rather than being left with the worst cliffhanger imaginable. Either way, I usually want the answer. And sometimes I don't get it. That bothers me. But with someone like Alexander the Great, dead for over 2,000 years, I might just have to live with that itch. So after everything we've explored today, is one of these explanations more likely than the rest? For me, the most plausible answer is also the most disturbing. Guillain-Barré syndrome. It explains both the illness and the eerie non-decomposition. There's always a kernel of truth in myth. If his body truly stayed intact for 6 days in the Babylonian heat, this is likely why. And that's utterly terrifying. The idea that someone could be alive, possibly aware, and completely powerless to stop his own embalming is something I barely want to think about. And if we do somehow find out that this was definitively how he died, then it's my own fault that I absolutely had to know. As for his remains, I think it's more likely that Mother Nature claimed them. An earthquake, rising waters, the slow accumulation of centuries of sediment. If the priesthood had hidden him in Alexandria, I feel like we would have found him by now. But it doesn't mean I'm not rooting for the people who will never stop looking. So what would it look like if someone like Alexander the Great died under mysterious circumstances today? I don't think we have to imagine it. I think we already know. Think back to June 2009 and the death of Michael Jackson, one of the most famous people to have ever lived, gone. And at first, nobody knew exactly what happened. Even the 2009 version of social media was on fire. Reports came in so fast that it was impossible to separate fact from fiction. Was he dead? Still alive? Maybe it was a hoax. For months, the world worked through its collective shock. New generations discovered his music while older ones took comfort in it. Cable news was wall-to-wall coverage. Social media was an endless stream of Michael Jackson content. Now multiply that by 1,000 for 2026. The speculation would be constant and relentless. Reaction videos to theories, then reactions to the reactions. There would be entire podcasts dedicated to the most minute medical details. Influencers live stream from outside the palace. And the true crime ecosystem, I think it might actually eat itself. Conspiracy theories would be given equal weight with verified facts. Common threads would devolve into personal attacks and somehow real-world threats. I'm honestly not sure we could handle something like that today. Back in 323 BCE, the world seems to have handled it with more grace, if that stargazer's diary is any indication. Quote, the king died, clouds, end quote. People had their questions and beliefs, but they seemed more willing to accept that their leader, who was probably a god, had simply been called back to the heavens. Besides, they were too busy fighting over who'd be the next leader to obsess over the last one. Or maybe they still did. They just had fewer ways of telling us about it. Thanks so much for joining me for this episode of Hidden History. I'm Dr. Huni Bhatt. Join me next time as we explore another unbelievable story from the past. What do you think really killed Alexander the Great? Any burning theories of your own? Let me know in the comments and I might bring them up in a future episode. And be sure to subscribe on YouTube or rate, review, and follow if you're listening on audio so we can keep building this community together. See you next week for another episode of Hidden History.
This is the sound of captivity. This is the sound of rescue. And this is the sound of freedom. Give Armenia's captive bears a second chance by supporting International Animal Rescue. Call 508-826-1083 or search The Great Bear Rescue to learn more.